Welcome back to another episode of Lions Collective. Jeff Ifrady, Justin Rogers, Will Birchfield, Colton Pouncey, the crew is back, and we have a lot to get into. Training camp, the scrimmage happened, preseason happened as well. We'll get all into it when we get back. We'll see you in a quick second. All right, fellas, since we last talked, preseason's happened, scrimmage has happened, training camp continues to happen, so we're going to dive into all of it. We're also going to foreshadow the preseason game this upcoming weekend. Ooh. So plenty to get to today. Offensive line talk, Hutch, rookies, and of course, shout out to Dog and Pony Show Brewing, a proud sponsor of Lions Collective. We'll talk about some players to watch in preseason game too.
Love it. Hey, before we dive into that stuff, I want to take everyone sort of inside a conversation that I was having with Colton today on the sidelines watching practice. And we were in the back end zone watching the first team offense versus the first team defense. A lot of good best on best reps today. And he just turned to me and he goes, do you ever pause and think about how many Hall of Famers we get to watch out here every day, like future Hall of Famers on a daily basis? And honestly, I hadn't, and I should do that more often. And I said to him, like, we should bring this up on the podcast. This is a great way to step back for a moment and appreciate the roster that has been assembled and that all of us are getting a chance to cover, that all the fans are getting a chance to watch. And I'll let you guys jump in there. But I thought it was a really refreshing reminder of the talent that we are sort of feasting our eyes on a daily basis.
Yeah, Birchie, I don't know if it was like a Gibbs long run or a St. Brown catch or one of Hutch's like 12 sacks today that kind of struck that for me. But I don't want to become numb to that. I guess that was my point in bringing it up, because we get to see these guys every day. And, you know, sometimes we talked about in the past, just watching Hutch and St. do their jobs out here. You know, you kind of overlook it sometimes just because of how good they are. That's the expectation for some of these guys. But when you really take a second to take a step back and think about the careers unfolding in front of you in real time, it's really cool. Like, I think 20 years, 30 years down the road, I'm going to look back at this time and be like, man, I covered Aiden Hutchinson in his prime. I covered Saint and Panay and Gibbs and Jared Goff, like all these guys that are going to have like great careers, lengthy careers, and probably do great things in this league, continue to do great things in this league. It's just a reminder, as you said, Birchie, you don't want to forget what you're watching out here. We can argue about, you know, who's starting at safety, what the secondary looks like, you know, who's going to be the right tackle, all that stuff. We can argue about that, talk about it all the time. But the collection of talent that this team has out there, it's pretty special. And when you get to see it on days like this, you know, one of the last days that fans are out here, you I guess you kind of appreciate it a little bit more.
I think it's a really good point. I there was a quote Dan had last year that I think about a lot, because I think it applies to more than just the singular situation. And it was about St. Brown. He said, you know, I just have to remind myself every single day not to take that guy for granted. And, you know, I had the opportunity, Will, I don't know if you were in the mix during Calvin Johnson's career. I feel like you were.
No, my first year was post Calvin.
Okay. So I had the opportunity to watch Calvin Johnson in practice every day. And it's kind of the same thing. And different in some way, because Calvin was a physical marvel and he would do those jaw-dropping things like practice after practice, and you start to just get used to it. And watching St. Brown this practice, like the greatness is just so absurd. And for him, it's just this extreme technical proficiency. Like, I've said this before, I don't know if I've said it directly to any of you guys, but like, I don't know how many players in the NFL squeeze more out of their physical ability than St. Brown. Like, everything is just so precise, so crisp. The Hall of Fame element of the discussion is super interesting, because, you know, I know there are people that will say too many people get let into Hall of Fame. I think it's really tough to get into the NFL Hall of Fame at five a year, given the fact that we know that there are 50 guys in a roster. So, you know, 1,500, 1,600 plus athletes every year, and far more than that when you start factoring in injuries. And only five of those guys are going to get into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, I'll go back to Ndamukong Suh, who was in 5 years in Detroit, a three-time first-team All-Pro, defensive rookie of the year, absolutely dominant, and looked every bit like he was going to roll into a Hall of Fame career. And, you know, Sue might make the Hall of Fame. I don't know, but it's certainly not going to be a first time through, it might take him 10, 15 years. I don't know. And so I think at some point I'm still recognizing that we're only seeing small stretches of these guys' careers so far. The Hall of Fame largely is about sustaining it over a long period of time. But I will say, if this group is the group that gets the Lions over the hump as a Super Bowl winner, like, that cherry on top will be very favorable when their candidacy comes up. But right now, I mean, if we're talking about future Hall of Famers, like, Sewell, St. Brown, Hutchinson, Gibbs are all kind of like on a very, very early trajectory. But again, I think St. Brown's going to have to do it for 5, 6, 7 more years, just given the receiving numbers that we see here. Hutchinson's going to have 5 more double-digit sack seasons plus, and he's going to have to finish with like 150 sacks for his career. Like, there's just so much more that needs to happen for them to get over that hump. But you guys are absolutely right. Like, it goes back to that ESPN survey we were talking about earlier this year, where the top – I mean, there's 9 guys at their position viewed by league decision-makers, not fans, not us, that are in the forest and maybe not see, or, you know, not seeing the forest through the trees. Like, the league sees this as a star-studded roster. And so, yeah, it's easy to lose sight of that, but, you know, certainly we're stepping back sometimes and appreciating what we get a chance to cover.
Justin, I think you make a great point too. Like, we should also remember exactly how challenging it is to make the Hall of Fame. It's not just about being great. It's about being great for a decade plus. And, you know, I think Colton's point is, like, there's a difference obviously between Hall of Fame career and Hall of Fame talent. But I just made a quick list of 9 guys, and I would argue that all of these guys have Hall of Fame talent, have the ability, if they can continue their current trajectories, to one day end up there. You guys can dispute any of these, but it's the first 4 you mentioned. Those were the first 4 that I wrote down: Hutch, Penei, Gibbs, and Saint. Jack Campbell, Jared Goff, Sam Laporta, Brian Branch, and J-Mo. Now, the flip side of that conversation is, like, I definitely would have had Kirby's name written down just a year ago as a Hall of Fame talent. And that's a reminder of how quickly careers and arcs can change in the NFL. But right now, as reporters and as fans, I think this collective community of Lions observers has it pretty darn good.
Yeah.
The golf debate is going to be super interesting. Go ahead, Colton, you first.
I was just going to say, I think the whole thing that we were talking about earlier is, we use the word Hall of Fame. I think Hall of Fame trajectory is probably more accurate here. Just, you know, looking at the scope of talent that they have all at once. And the fact that all these guys are under contract for a long time and they're part of the core here. Like, you don't really see too many places that have this collection of talent that stays in place as long as these guys are going to be here. And the fact that we get to witness that every year. I mean, this is year 5 for me on the Lions beat. My first year was 2022. Back then, Saint wasn't Saint. Hutch was a rookie. J-Mo was walking around practice with the football because he tore his ACL and couldn't practice. You look at the guys that were there then, the guys that are here now, like Jack Campbell, Jahmyr Gibbs, Brian Branch, Sam Laporta, all those guys were still in college when I first joined this beat. So I guess the point was just watching all these guys at once. You don't want to get numb to what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And it's easy for us to fall into the trap of, is this 6th-round pick going to make the roster? Is, you know, whatever discussion of the day it is. And everyone trying to tear this team down before the season even starts.
Yeah.
Like, let's just take a second to appreciate what you have. I guess that's my point. Like, as a neutral observer, you know, guy that didn't grow up in the state, just watching this team and these guys out here every day go to work, it's an impressive thing. And I guess today I just didn't want to lose sight of that.
Yeah, and let me just cut off the Jared Goff haters at the pass, if they do in fact exist. If he ends up winning a Super Bowl here, to Justin's point, and plays for as long as he intends to play, that dude's a Hall of Famer. And the other point I want to make briefly about Goff is that he answered so many of his critics last season who said he was an offensive line merchant or a Ben Johnson merchant. He had an offensive coordinator who was fired as a play caller midseason, and he had an offensive line that by the end of the year was probably one of the weaker units in the league, and he still put up another terrific season. He leads the NFL over the past 3 years in touchdowns, in completions, in yards. He's 2nd over that stretch to Lamar Jackson in passer rating. Like, he has put up season after elite season. You can differ on whether or not the entire skill set is elite, but the production is, and ultimately that's what matters at the quarterback position.
It's so tough to get in as a quarterback too. And you could bring up Matthew Stafford. When he left here, he was not on a Hall of Fame trajectory. He wasn't, but he had to, he had to win a championship. He had to get a first team all pro. He had to get an MVP award. And I think last year was really that the MVP was what kind of maybe solidified his future candidacy. You know, that Pro Football Reference does a really nice, it's called like Hall of Fame Monitor, right? And it has all these different variables that go into it. And it's really, really insightful. And so the average Hall of Fame quarterback is 100 on their scale. And Stafford now just kind of tipping the scale. In terms of active guys only, Patrick Mahomes is already basically considered a shoe-in for Hall of Fame. But Goff is like 55 on this thing. And obviously he's got a lot of time to play, but we're talking in the Drew Bledsoe, Carson Palmer, Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins range. Like, there's a lot of work to do for Goff to kind of rise above his peers when he gets to the point where he's in a ballot. And again, the Super Bowl will carry so much weight. Nobody's going to remember when they're debating his candidacy in this room of 50 writers that do, that he had a great season when he had a roughed up offensive line. That's not going to cut it. Like, he's going to have to find a way to maybe squeeze in an all pro, maybe squeeze in an MVP. He certainly has the pieces around him to do that if they kind of take off the leash with the play calling. But I think without a championship, I'd have a hard time seeing Jared Goff get into the Hall of Fame.
Well, I think that was a caveat I was applying, and that's what we discussed on the sideline too. Like, he is a Super Bowl and, you know, another 7 years of his current level of play away from being a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback. And the one thing that those Hall of Fame monitors don't take into account are narratives. And to your point, Justin, if he can not just win one, but win one here for this franchise, that's going to feel like two, three, you know, that would put him in company all to himself.
And I think if he has like 8 more years, maybe, and I know that's asking a lot, but like 7-8 more years on his current trajectory, like stats wise, he'll finish like top 10 or 12 in a lot of statistical, you know, these counting stats. Yeah. So that plus the Super Bowl, plus maybe he can get like second team, AP, first team, second team. I don't know. At least one of those.
Yeah.
That probably puts him in that conversation if he gets that elusive Super Bowl that everyone in the city wants to see.
Yeah, right now he's on the Matt Ryan trajectory, right? Like, Matt Ryan had all those stats. He played a long time. Matt Ryan is 106 on the Hall of Fame monitor, but I don't think anybody's in a race to put Matt Ryan in. Had he won that Super Bowl, though, to go with the MVP he won that year?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably a lock.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still trying to imagine myself in Cleveland doing a show. So I'm very thankful I'm doing shows here in Detroit. I wonder what that Jeff would sound like, to be honest. Now post Myles Garrett, it'd be terrible. But we have a lot to get into. Let's talk about that offensive line, because, you know, we did discuss the Cade Mays injury, how it affects the Detroit Lions O-line. There's been some configurating with the O-line. Tate Ratledge playing a little bit of center. Dan just trying to see, hey, if we need Tate to play it, we just want to know he's capable of playing it. But Seth McLaughlin, Juice working his way back. I know we had that conversation, but there's kind of been some you know, Dan Campbell moving some chess pieces around, Ben Barch and Mahogany kind of playing together. What have you guys thought about the offensive line movement? And to you, what is the most ideal unit out there for week one?
Guys, I've gone through it this week. I've been on this path for a long time that I've been very dismissive of Tate Ratledge as a solution at center. And then we watched that practice where he's snapping the whole practice. I'm like, maybe they're going to do it. And we asked Dan about it, and he basically put it back in the closet. So it sounds like that is not the plan. I was kind of looking through the lens. I was trying to make heads or tails of it. And I just said, look, maybe that's how they feel. They can get their best five out there with Mahogany and Barch. Like, maybe they felt like that was their best five. And I had talked myself into it and drawn up the case. And then it just got thrown back in the garbage. But this is going to boil down to Juice Scruggs, or whether he's going to give up that center job to Seth McLaughlin coming from behind. And, I think right now the Lions seem pretty reluctant to concede that McLaughlin can win that starting job. But I thought he had a really nice preseason debut. I do. And I thought he's gotten a little bit better each of these practices. It's not like he's setting the world on fire, but I believe he legitimately belongs in serious consideration for that job. I understand why you want to give it to Scruggs first and foremost, but I want to see this thing really play out on the field the next 2 weeks, including those preseason games, to see if McLaughlin is maybe the better option.
Go ahead, Bertie.
Yeah, I mean, to answer the question, what's the best configuration? The best configuration is Juice Scruggs at center playing like he did in the first nine games of 2024 when he was a very stable NFL center. And then it's the familiar faces of Tate at right guard, Mahogany at left guard. I will say for Mahogany, you know, he played mostly right guard in college. That was where he got drafted. That was how he kind of announced himself as an NFL prospect. And last year was his first time playing left guard consistently since 2020. I mean, that's a long gap. And I know they're pretty similar positions, but it is still different footwork. It's different steps. It's different handwork. And I think he is hopeful, and they're probably hopeful, that with that first season in the NFL of left guard under his belt, he'll be a little bit more stable this year. And then obviously Blake and Panay on the ends. I thought that Mahogany was better than people publicly gave him credit for after the preseason opener. And I will admit to being a Mahogany apologist, just like Ennis is, just like Colton is for Ennis, his boy from Mizzou, although maybe not anymore. And you know, I thought he did show elements of the power that they love so much. And look, the pass protection isn't great. I actually think he was maybe guilty on that last sack that Hutch had today on the 2-point conversion. He seemed pretty annoyed with himself coming off the field after that, but he can get to the second level. That is one thing he does really well, and he can pick off defenders there. And I think in a team that is really focused on getting back to its dominance on the ground, you know, that probably appeals to them. And then Blake Miller showed you exactly what he can do in the preseason when he's not facing Aiden Hutchinson on almost every single rep. And look, guys, there aren't many Hutches out there. Yes, it's I don't even want to say it's discouraging. It is a reminder of how good Hutch is, that Hutch has beat him so often in training camp. But that's not a matchup that he's going to have to see a whole lot this season. He looked pretty good in his matchup against it was Boye Mafi, right? Who's a pretty talented, accomplished edge rusher. So I came out of that Bengals game feeling a lot better about Blake than I did going in. And I think those five, if Juice can reclaim his form from 2024, should be enough to at least get them back to Cade Mays at week 6-7.
Yeah, I don't know if Juice is still kind of shaking off the rust. I know it's been a minute since he's played some center here full time, but he definitely needs to pick it up.
Yeah,
because I like what I've seen from McLaughlin. Honestly, like, you know, did he have some down points in that preseason game? Sure, but he hasn't played football in a while, and you know, this is really his first real taste of like extended football. So at this level, so look, I think that's gonna be a battle. I thought it was going to be more of a competition at left guard. I'm going to be honest. Obviously, Ben Bartsch hasn't been 100%.
Yeah.
Miles Frazier is kind of falling behind the pack there. Yeah. So it looks like it's Christian Mahogany's to lose at this point. And look, I've been, you know, decently impressed with what I've seen from him. In the one-on-ones, he's been really holding it down. You know, he had some ups and downs in the preseason game, but I do think playing next to Panay this year is really going to help him. So I guess I'm banking on that a little bit. Panay just kind of take him over the top. But look, is this offensive line like what it was a few years ago? No, but I think it can be better than it was last year. I think a guy like Juice or Seth, whatever combination we see, can get you through week 6 or week 7, as Bertie mentioned, until Cade comes back. And if you look at the schedule that the Lions are going to face, it's the Saints that are dealing with some injuries right now. Obviously, that Bills game week 2 is going to be pretty tough. And you got the Jets, Panthers, Cardinals, and maybe he's back for that next game against the Packers. But I think that's October 25th. Yeah. So can Seth and Juice hold it down until then? I think so. I really do. And, you know, I think one thing we're really not talking about is Tate Ratledge making that leap at right guard.
Yeah.
Dan Campbell was talking about some of the dudes that they have. I think it was off a joint practice question, but he said Ratledge is an up-and-coming player. Yeah. And that's the first time I've heard Dan mention Tate in the same breath as guys like Panay, Hutch, Gibbs, Saint, you know, Jack and Jamal before. And he was talking about all those guys in that same breath. And so that's, to me, is about as high praise as it gets. So maybe we're just kind of underrating Tate a little bit. Like, I think we all saw him grow from where he was week 1 against the Packers last year to where he finished last year. But it seems like the coaching staff is expecting big things from Tate. So Tate is a plus player this year, whereas last year he was just kind of treading water. That's something that we're not really talking about enough. That's something that can have, you know, tangible impact on this offensive line. Blake Miller's athleticism. I know he's getting worked by Hutch sometimes in these practices, not sometimes, a lot of times, but that's the best education for a young player like Blake Miller. And I think his athleticism, we saw it in that preseason game, what he can do in the screen game, moving in space. that's stuff that just wasn't available last year. Taylor was kind of in and out of the lineup, and he was, obviously getting up there. Blake is really athletic and he can move, man. And, when he's consistent with his footwork and his technique, he can be a pretty formidable tackle out there. We got to see more of it, obviously, but I love his athleticism and the screen game and things that they can do with him in that department. I think Drew Petson can be really creative with what he can do with him there. So obviously, I think losing Cade Mays hurts, but I do like elements of this offensive line that can take a leap in the second year or this first year with these guys all together. But with Christian and Tate, I think those guys can have a better year. Tate having another year under his belt and Christian playing next to Panay, I think that can kind of get you through to week six when K comes back and he's kind of the linchpin to that offensive line.
Do we have to add Tate to the Hall of Fame list now?
We might have to. Yeah. Respect the Hall of Fame monitor.
Couple of blocks from practice I wanted to highlight. One from today, Hutchinson, usually typically destroying everyone, got destroyed.
Yeah.
Tried to come through on a stunt, and Rattles just gave him a two-handed shove straight into the dirt.
Escorted him sent to the dirt.
It looked like he was on a slip and slide. And then during the scrimmage the other night, you talk about Miller's ability to play in space, Colton, and I think we typically think of that as screen game. College, he showed a ton of ability to climb in the second level and seal off that linebacker. I thought it was a big strength of his. He had a pulling block the other night, just all the way there on the left side. So now you basically got Sewell and Miller kind of leading the way for you. Like, that's really potentially a big threat in the ground game. And so I went through, that was like my big focus when I rewatched the film of the preseason opener, was the offensive line, the starting five that were out there. And I thought McLaughlin was the most consistent. And to Will's point, I thought Mahogany played really well. Even the two penalties they had were kind of dicey. One was more caused by Frazier. The hold was questionable at best. I thought he played well otherwise. And Miller showed ton of promise. Miles Frazier had a rough night. Larry Borum had a rough night. But it's tough to be eight deep reliable on the offensive line. That's not a Detroit problem. That's an NFL problem.
Jeff, what's the general temperature on the center battle? Who do most fans prefer to see out there week one? Can you tell?
Yeah, it's no question Juice Scruggs. Yeah. I think, I think the intrigue it's a surprise. I think Seth McLaughlin, though, the intrigue is there. I mean, we talked about it, and I think a lot of fans have that as well. Young player, you understand the pedigree, but it's Juice. I think people are at a point now with the Tate thing, and I know fans are more trust me, I fall in this category. We overreact to things, and when you see Tate Ratledge playing center, Dan, the responsible ones, like, hey, we need to have a guy in case, we need a center. But for fans, it's like, why? Why? Can he just
how dare you?
Yeah, how dare you, Dan Campbell? So, yeah, it's no doubt Juice Scruggs. And just reading the reporting, too, it seems like, that's the guy they like. And he's the guy who started, we've talked about it, started games at center. So fans are all in on it.
I'm honestly really surprised by that. I don't know what you guys are getting feedback wise, but like at least within the sphere of my site, like they're all in on McLaughlin. Like it's a little overwhelming and over the top, to be honest with you. But like I understand, like you hear Ribbington Award winner and coming back from injury, and there's just this intrigue of untapped potential, right? Like we've seen Juice Scruggs, but the mystery box could be something better. I'm really surprised Jeff is not hearing the same things, just I guess showing that not all audiences are the same, right?
Yeah, I think you could kind of make a similar case about Juice Scruggs, though. I mean, he was a second round pick. He was a very valued player coming out of Penn State, where he played exclusively center. And if you buy into the performance he put out there in 2024 for a playoff team, you could argue that not only is his floor obviously already higher than Seth's or McLaughlin's, but like maybe the ceiling is just as high. I mean, McLaughlin was probably going to be, if he even was drafted, a day three pick, but NFL teams thought enough of Scruggs to pick him in the second round. That was only 3 years ago. So, I think you can buy into the potential of Scruggs just like you can McLaughlin. I will say the two poor exchanges on snaps between Scruggs and Goff in the scrimmage Monday night were obviously troubling. It was in both those snaps, I believe, were, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but we're with Goff under center and the ball ended up just hitting the ground. One of them was down near the goal line. So Juice has talked about wanting to get as many reps with Jared as possible over the next couple of weeks. entering week one to have their chemistry down. And that was, or those were two clear examples that they still have a ways to go in connecting on something as simple as an under center snap.
I think one last thing we should put out here, and I think matters a lot in the discussion, and it's just the size of the new players. And a lot of people, including I'm guilty of this, I don't know if you guys have been guilty of this, but we've framed Seth McLaughlin as undersized. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think he's average sized for an NFL center, but he's undersized for Detroit. Mm. And that's where the terminology comes in, is because Frank Ragnow was not only a little bit bigger, but one of the strongest dudes to ever walk through that locker room in the time that I've covered the team. Cade Mays was intentionally signed at 325 pounds. Juice Scruggs is tipping the scales now at 320. He's actually a little bit shorter than McLaughlin, so wider frame. And so that 320 to 305 is just something the Lions prefer, is a beefier option there at center. And, you know, when Campbell talks about McLaughlin being undersized, that's what he means, is it's just undersized for them and what they want to do.
Mm. Yeah, and Seth is 304, as you mentioned, and Juice 320, but it's also length. You know, Seth has 31-inch arms, and Juice is at 33 1/4. So I feel like that matters more. Like, a lot of times you hear about this in the draft, like length, and you're like, wait, this guy's taller. It's really like, for that position, weight and yeah, length more than anything. So they do want a guy that can anchor in the middle. That's what they talked, you know, Cade Mays about, kind of all offseason. Just, this dude can anchor pass protection. He's going to protect Jared Goff. He can move people. And so without that, you know, you got to turn the book a little bit. And who do you want to go with? Juice Scruggs or a guy like Seth McLaughlin, the young guy that can make a push here, or the veteran that has some starting experience? I feel like just based on this conversation, they're probably going to go with Juice and give him every opportunity to win that battle. But Seth has a chance to make a push here too.
Before we get to Hutch, I do want to tell the people, we're going to get to Dog and Pony Show picks later for our preseason game too, but I gotta tell you my prize picks for Lions Collective. So allow me to do so. Today we're going outside of the Lions, and we're going to go with, we're going with unconventional. All right, usually we go Lions. We're going with Cowboys versus Giants. This is September 13th, and I'm going more Dak Prescott, 257.5 passing yards. I'm going more Javonte Williams, 10.5 receiving yards. And I'm going less Cam Scadabo, 19.5 receiving yards. Don't forget. Oh, let me throw this up for you. Sorry about that. There you go. There's the context of the picks. So always remember, all you got to do, use code HMA. And if you're a new user, you play $5, get $150 if you win. So you could tail my picks, or you go on there and use your own picks. But shout out to Prize Picks for being a sponsor of Lions Collective, America's number one sports picks app. All right.
Let's get. I thought those were preseason picks for a second. I thought you were a real sicko.
Whoa. That'd be concerning. Okay, I would understand that. It's where a good friend comes in and says, hey, man, all right, you need to call the number.
Call the number.
But let's talk about Aiden Hutchinson. I think that's the exciting part, because we talked about Hall of Famers earlier, and I think with Hutch, you just kind of assume he's Hutch. He's great. But is there another level Hutch can get to, you know, defensive player of the year winner? He was fourth in the league in sacks last year, coming off a broken leg. People need to understand that as well. But I'll ask the question to you guys. Dan was talking high about him. He's been really good lately, obviously. We know what he is. But is there another level for Aiden Hutchinson?
Who wants to lead?
Go ahead, J-Raj.
Yeah, I mean, there's always an opportunity to get better. But I think we need to start off with this. Top five in sacks, first in pressure, top three in win rate, close to the top of the league in time to pressure and time to sack. And his get off for his size is really good. So, like, Aiden Hutchinson's already, I don't want to say butting up against his ceiling, but he's really, really, really good. And so what is the next tier? Well, it's Myles Garrett, right? Like, Myles Garrett is from another planet. How do you tap into that level of talent? And, you know, it's just continuing to tweak and fine tune and get a little bit better in all the things that you already do really well. But I will say, being able to practice daily against Penei Sewell to refine those techniques against your equal in the world on the blocking side is the best thing that Hutchinson could possibly ask for. You know, all these other great edge rushers don't have, or very few of them have, that great counterpart in practice to push them in that iron sharpens iron way. And so, you know, I think Sewell is such a key to where Hutchinson's already reached, because he's grown so much since what I thought was a pedestrian rookie year, despite the sack numbers, to where he is now, and you know, creating that ceiling for him to get even a little bit better.
Yeah, I think the area where Hutch stands to improve the most this year, and this might sound counterintuitive, is by playing a little bit less each game. And the Lions, it appears on paper, finally have a defensive line that will allow him to do that. He was the only defensive end in the NFL last year in the regular season who played over 1,000 snaps. He plays a huge load. And over the course of a year, you know, that has to wear on you, and even over the course of a game. And now that's something that Aiden has even acknowledged. And I think he talked about it in the spring. I asked him again when we had him on our Fox 2 training camp special, hey, with these fresh legs on the edge now in DJ Wonnum and Derek Moore, while of course you want to be out there for every single play, could you stand to benefit, do you think, from a few more breathers per game? And he said, yeah, I think so. And he actually said that we began to do that by the end of last season. And I felt it later in games where I had like a little extra pop that I might not have had before. And sure enough, if you go back and look at his deployment and his production at the end of last season, he was playing over the first 13 games, 93% of the Lions' defensive snaps. And over the last four, that fell to 83%, which feels a little bit more realistic. And over those four games, six sacks. Now, it doesn't mean that there is a direct correlation between those two things, but when he acknowledges it himself that he felt like he had a little extra pop, it's worth exploring. And I asked Shep that same question maybe 2 weeks ago, that, you know, with Wonnum and Moore, do you guys consider giving Hutch a few extra blows per game? And, you know, he hits you with the first retort, which is always, yeah, you come down and tell Hutch you're not playing, 95% of the snaps in this game. But he went on to sort of concede, yes. He said, seriously, absolutely. That is something that they're thinking about, because he acknowledges the wear and tear over 21, 22 weeks just takes its toll on the body when you're asking a guy to play 90%, 95% of snaps every single week, especially when he is playing a highly physical position where it's like shock and shed, as Shep said, every play. And so, you know, he said, you want to get to a point where Hutch doesn't feel like, I got to carry this load, I got to do this by myself. You want to get to a point where he can think to himself, all right, I'm tired, let me tap my head and let my brother come get some. So I do think that they're equipped for the first time to scale back just a little bit on Hutch's use. And they should feel, and he should feel, the benefit of that late in games and late in the season.
I do think that can go a long way, Birchie. I think that's a good point to bring up. Something I'll talk about, like, I remember Hutch's 2023 season, his second year in the league. Like, I want to say the majority of that season, people were kind of disappointed in his production. He finished that year with 11 and a half sacks and 100 pressures. I think the pressures were second or first in the league among edge rushers. Now, the final two games of the year, game number 16 and 17, he had three sacks against the Cowboys, and he finished with two sacks in week 18 against the Vikings. Before that, he only had 6.5 sacks through the first, 15 games of the season. And I was trying to tell everyone, like, this guy's productive. He's just not finishing correctly. And, like, he doesn't have a ton of help on the edge, but he's having a really good season. He just needs to learn how to finish some of these sacks a little bit more. And then he goes off and he has five sacks in the last two games. Everyone's like, oh, that was a pretty good year. I'm like, okay, like, I'm glad we're on the same page. You look at what he did last year, and obviously he was on such a torrid pace in 2024. I would have loved to see what he did with a full game, a full season of games that year. I think he probably would have had like 17, 18 sacks at his pace. But even last year, another 100 pressures. This time, he gets up to 14.5 sacks. And now everyone's like, oh, this guy's elite. Like, this is the Hutch that we're talking about. And I'm like, he was basically doing this. He just didn't have the help on the other end, funneling things back his way after he's creating pressure. That's what can limit you from 11.5 sacks to 14.5 sacks when you do have a little bit of help on the edge. And Alkanim Muhammad, what he did last year, helped Aiden. This year, you're talking about the rotation of guys that are going to be opposite of him. Derek Moore, we saw what he did in practice today. He was tearing stuff up. I'm sure we'll talk about him later this episode, but he had a great day. DJ Wanham, we see what he can do, and we know what he can be in this league. Tyler Lacy playing that big end. They're going to have a rotation of guys that I'm really comfortable with doing their job. And I think that Hutch is going to appreciate this year having that consistent help across from him. And then you think about some of those games last year where Hutch would have a sack and then would get called back because of a penalty by someone else, like Terrion or Brian Branch or something like that. Like probably three sacks that were taken away off his total last year. He probably could have had like 17 and a half last year, for being honest. So I absolutely think, you know, we're talking about the question, is Hutch poised for even more? Based on what we're seeing in practice right now, I would say yes. And I think the question is, can he get the help opposite of him to create that environment to where he can take his game to another level? Because he's been consistent really for 3 years now at this level. And he's finishing more. He's got a better pass rush repertoire. Going against Sewell every day, like you said, Justin, it's continuing to make this guy better. And now he's at a point where he is making young guys better going against him. We see what he's doing for Blake Miller. Blake Miller is getting a firsthand education in defending Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah,
he's probably getting a D in that right now, but it's okay. It's Ian Hutchinson, man. He's going to give a lot of people that. So I look at his development over the last, you know, 2-3 seasons, and this guy is at another level. Is he quite the Myles Garrett conversation? No. That doesn't mean he's not an all-pro talent, and he really is. And we're seeing that in practice. We've seen that last year. I do think he's going to continue adding to his game and taking his game to another level. I just think I look at what's around him in training camp, and I really like the setup they have for him between Derek Moore, DJ Wanham, Tyler Lacy. I think these guys are going to play within the structure of the defense, funnel things back his way, and he just has to take care of business, which I think he will do.
I just want to statistically hammer home Colton's point here on the 23 season. Hutchinson in the middle of that year and even kind of bleeding into the second half had a 7-game stretch where he had one game with one sack. He had 2 sacks over the course of 10 games, and like you just – That's not acceptable for great players. You know, you can say he's pressuring and having an impact, but if you're not finishing and getting those sacks, like great players don't have those kind of lulls. He goes into that 23 season before he breaks his leg and sacks in 4 out of 5 games. Last year he had sacks in 12 out of 17, and I don't think had more than a back-to-back stretch without a sack. And, you know, if you want to compare it to Myles Garrett had sacks in 13 out of 17. So the consistency and the sack production consistency for Hutchinson's really what has taken off here in the last 2 seasons.
Yeah, and if we're going to start comparing every defensive end to Myles Garrett.
The greatest defensive player of all time.
Sweet. No one's as good as Myles Garrett. Exactly. I was going to say, he's in the conversation for greatest defensive player ever. So if you want him to be Myles Garrett, you're going to be forever disappointed. It doesn't mean he's not one of the 25 best players in the NFL. A couple more things to add here. If we take Blake Miller to be an average NFL tackle, which I think based off his performance last week feels like sort of a fair bar to set for him, Hutchinson is destroying him. And there are average tackles on almost every single NFL team. It's rare to find a team that has 2 top-notch bookends, and the Lions will hunt those matchups all season. Of course, he's not going to get one-on-ones every time. He's also not out here, and he is still eating against what I would say is probably an average, stable NFL tackle. The other thing going for him in 2024 when he was at that torrid pace before his injury was a healthy Aleem McNeil next to him. And he has that working in his favor again this year. Aleem was playing before his injury that year, I would argue at a Pro Bowl level. And those two together were wreaking all kinds of havoc as an inside-out duo. Lastly, that Robert Porche single-season sack record is holding on for dear life. It's 15 and a half. This feels like the year that Hutch finally gets it. And Porche, I asked him this last year. He's like, I want him to break it. That's what records are meant for. So I think this is the year that one finally comes down.
Let's talk about those rookies. My guy, Keith Abney, very excited.
Yeah.
We're good PR coming out for Keith Abney. Gets me excited. I said, probably 2 months ago that I thought he would start at nickel. Don't know if that's going to happen week one, but he is getting better and he is getting a lot of reps. That's good. That's good, Justin, if that's the case. But just the rookies in general, Jimmy Rolder commented, I know, on his injury, which is positive news for him. But what are some of the rookies you guys have been paying attention to? Players that have, you mentioned Derek Moore, players that have surprised you, not surprised you, impressed you, et cetera.
Jeff, Colton, you brought him up. Jeff wanted to end the pod right there when Justin said he might. Bang, we're good. We're out.
That's all I need.
Oh, Colton just led with Derek Moore, so he hit on that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, obviously, Derek missed some time with, what was it? Was it a groin injury?
It was a groin injury, yep.
Yeah, and I didn't know how much time he was going to miss. I didn't know how long it would take him to kind of get reacclimated. Probably a little bit, but what we're seeing now, he looks like he hasn't skipped a beat, man. Like, he is, like, they're bringing him in a lot of, like, third down situations, obviously, and if that's his role this year, I think he can really make an impact. I think, you know, maybe that's where he can start. You're talking about when the season begins, maybe the third down specialist, but he can do a lot, man. They're moving him all over that defensive line. Like, you know, I saw him dropping a coverage and try to cover Jahmyr Gibbs today. Maybe fans don't want to see a ton of that, but he's got the athleticism at least to hang in there. You know, he's doing these stunts in the interior. He can rush off the edge. You know, he can set an edge. Like, he can do it all for such a young player. And I think he's still learning, obviously. Like, he's far from finished product, but seeing what he could do along with Hutch, and he kind of talked about that after practice today, just like the confidence he has rushing opposite of Hutch. You know, I think you're seeing it, like, his confidence developing in real time in front of us. And I'll be honest, when they drafted him, I just didn't know what we were going to get from him. Sometimes it takes some of these edges a year or two to come on. But I think if you're talking just a rotational role, a guy that can come in, do his job, make an impact, I think Derek Moore can absolutely do that. And I wouldn't even, like, limit him to that. I think you're talking about at the end of the season, I think this guy can take over as a starter. You'll feel really good about the future. But in terms of what we're seeing right now, I've liked what I've seen from Derek Moore.
Those third down packages, man, with him, Hutchinson, and Wanham out there, like, that's a lot to handle. And it seemed like it was really frazzling the guard tackle exchanges. And Moore has looked very explosive. I thought he had one of his best practices directly before his injury. And then he's just kind of come back and picked it right back up where he left off. I think it's really promising. You know, I think you still lower the bar on expectations always for a rookie edge rusher. But as you said, if this is kind of an early role for him paired with spelling Hutchinson, because I think he's going to be that guy that's giving Hutchinson those breathers, you know, that'll be a really nice fit and role for a rookie season for this guy.
Yeah, Justin, you mentioned that NASCAR package they were playing with today in the scrimmage. And one thing that caught my eye, and it's been catching my eye for most of camp, is just the frequency with which they're subbing on defense. And Colton, you and I were having this conversation today too. Like, Shep just seems very, like, down and distance matchup oriented this year. And that's part of the flexibility that he and Dan together were trying to build into this defense that they didn't have last year. This defense, by the end of last season especially, was rigid. It was stiff. Like, there were just only so many ways they could function. And it already feels like they're evolving into a more fluid unit. And you see that after almost every play in a scrimmage, the different bodies that are shuttling in and out. And look, they're not, like, recreating the wheel and doing that, but it does stand in some contrast to how they operated last year. And yeah, I agree. I think at one point today, Justin, it was more Wanham, Hutch, and maybe Levi out there together. And, you know, they're placing an emphasis on disruption up front. And Derek Moore is a guy that can definitely provide that.
Hey, Colton, maybe you can squeeze in a look at this stat in between talking points. But I would say the other thing it feels on the menu is blitzing. And it felt like they maybe tailed off on their blitzing late last season. But, man, and it's defensive back blitzing in particular. Like, these safeties and corners and nickels are just coming screaming into the backfield. And I feel like the Lions offense has actually taken – it's sweet ass time adjusting to this, because it's day after day after day that these safeties and nickels and corners are coming through unblocked. And, you know, if you get that attention as well, whether it's Hutchinson and Wanham or Lacey commanding two blockers, you're freeing up those blitzers on the edge to just rip around the corner. And it's been very successful through camp. And I'm curious how that ports to the regular season.
Dude, Colton, you said last year at one point, I think in the preseason, like, who's going to be the team's second leader in sacks? And you said Brian Branch. Bro, it's going to be Ennis Rakestraw. That guy, the past 2 days, has been in the backfield every other snap blitzing off the corner. He has been a terror.
Is he in two, man?
Is he in two? Yes.
Thomas Harper got in there a little bit too. Like,
Abney was in there at one point today, Jeff.
Yeah, that could be – there you go, Jeff. That could be something we see more of for sure. And
yeah.
We know Shep has already talked about wanting to play more nickel. And if he's just going to send these guys on blitzes, then I love that. Like, create some havoc any way you can.
Yeah.
But going back to Bertie, what you and I were talking about during practice with all the subs, like, we talked about the defensive end rotation, how they're just going to throw different guys out there for different packages. But even the linebacker stuff, we're seeing Devin White in one play. Then you have Malcolm come in on heavier run sets. Just the nickel versatility, the safeties moving around. Like, it really seems like they want to have an answer for everything that the offense can throw at them this year. And that's something that just didn't feel like it was the case last year. It felt like a very, you know, this is how we're doing things. This is the group that we're running out there. These guys are going to play a million snaps and that's it. Yeah. Whereas this year, it definitely feels like, you know, it was intentional, right? They want to get depth. They want to get more versatile. But seeing that play out in practice has been really fun to watch. And I am curious to see how that translates to the regular season.
Yeah.
I do want to dip back to the Abney discussion because I think the nickel situation might be the most fluid one on the roster right now. And they're still working out some kinks on the safety situation as well. But we all know it started with McCreary. Didn't go well. He's actually having a pretty good week of practice, but it's mostly on the outside. Went to Izian, and now it's Abney repping there this week, first team stuff all week. And he does a couple things really well. One, his anticipation coming forward is outstanding. Like, he just, he sees it, he jumps the route, he's very quick, he's got a great accelerator, and he breaks up those passes, and he's an excellent, excellent tackler in the open field. He's a little handsy, and that's been his problem, I think, throughout camp, is very aggressive with the way he's playing the receiver physically beyond that 5 yards line of scrimmage. The officials aren't out there every day, but the days that the officials have been out there, been a little bit too many flags for a nickel cornerback. So if he can clean that up and learn to be a little bit more reliant on his feet and not his hands, which is the transition all rookie cornerbacks have to make, but particularly shifting from outside to in where it's naturally more physical, like, that's going to be his path. I've said all along, I think he's starting games this year. I was not convinced it's week one, but right now it just feels like that nickel situation is wide, wide open. I do not know. I could not tell you who will be the starter week one if you asked me today. No idea.
Yeah.
One thing I love that the coaching staff does is if you're impressing them, they will give you those opportunities, those breadcrumbs, whether it's, you know, putting you in on a package here or giving you a couple snaps against Saint, seeing how you hold up. Like, I love that in training camp. That's probably one of my favorite things to track. I remember when Brian Branch first got here, and I think we all assumed back then, okay, CJ Gardner-Johnson is going to be your starting safety, or nickel, I guess, back then. And then you have Tracy Walker, this guy that's coming back. And it's like, oh, this is a former team captain. Of course, he's going to start. Brian Branch very quickly, like, worked his way into that starting lineup and, you know, didn't let go. Abney, it's a little bit different, but every guy's trajectory is different. But seeing him get more opportunities in these practices with the first team defense has been a lot of fun to watch personally for me, because he was a really fun player to study, his draft tape and how physical he is, how quick he is, how instinctive he is. And seeing that translate to the field now and getting those reps. All right, youngin, go in, line up against Saint in the slot, see how you hold up.
Yeah.
Those are tests that the coaching staff like track and take note of. And if he's winning those matchups, obviously you're not going to win more of them than you lose against Saint. But if he's showing some fight in those situations, which I think he has, especially in one-on-ones in those wide receiver DB drills, those are fun to watch too.
Yeah.
Those are the little things that the coaching staff is looking for, and how quick you are to react. If you're retaining the information that's being taught to you, those are the signs that they need to see in order to give you, a little bit more run with the defense. And so, look, he's in the mix, Jeff. That's your guy. He's been out there pretty frequently. They're rotating guys in and out, but I think I would say right now he's got probably as good a shot as anyone to win that starting job. And it might come later, as Justin mentioned, but I wouldn't write him off. If he keeps playing like he has and performing like he has, and he finishes strong in these two preseason games, there's a chance that he can force his way into the mix.
Yeah, I mean, 28 has climbed from the third team to the first team. And now it doesn't mean that he is entrenched in the first team, but man, watching them play today, Abney was out there a lot with the first team defense at nickel. And it wasn't a great day for him in coverage. I'm regretting to report to you, Jeff. I mean, he definitely got beat a couple times for long completions, typically to Saint, which is a little bit like Hutch taking Blake Miller to school. But he also was in the backfield on one of Derek Moore's sacks, I think on 3rd and 11. That's the one, Justin, where Derek like knifed through the the tackling guard, and Abney came off the other edge. He was right there. They kind of met the quarterback in the backfield together. And then Abney had a great rep in the scrimmage against St. Brown out of the slot on third down when the defense was dominating in the first half. And it was a pretty deep seam shot, maybe 20, 25 yards down the field. And look, St. came up asking for a flag. So I asked Abney about that today. We did a little stand-up interview after practice. And I said, so was it clean coverage? And he said, we rolled the tape on that, and the coaches said it was clean. So at least he's got that one. He's got that one in his bag, and that was a really good rep. And you know, he said, "Look, that's a huge confidence booster for me. If I can start stacking reps like that against the best slot receiver and one of the best receivers, period, in the NFL, that shows me off the rip I can compete against the best of the best." So that guy is climbing, and climbing pretty quickly. I mean, like when I say from third team to first team, it's kind of jarring how quickly this has happened. I was just getting kind of used to seeing number 28 take snaps with the third team, maybe some second team. Boom, now he's up at the first team. So definitely a guy to watch on Saturday and then into the final week of camp.
And he's fearless, man. Like,
yeah,
that's one thing that Dan talked about. Like, there are guys that go up against Satan JMO and you just see the fear in their eyes and you're like, okay, what do I do now? Yeah. He's not one of those guys. He wants the competition. He wants the battle. And look, he's going to lose some of them, but if you can show some fight, like, the coaching staff will take note of that and they'll act accordingly.
Yeah.
I did really quickly want to mention, because I think it's a good group of UDFAs that Brad Holmes has brought in here. I don't know if any of them make the 53, but I've really liked what I've seen from Altmaier, like what I've seen from Eric Hunter, the linebacker. The two edge rushers, Anthony Lucas and Eric O'Neill, both have kind of popped increasingly in practice. Both did some good things in that preseason game. And then guard Melvin Priestley, who was an offensive tackle in college. He's kind of learning some of the mental nuances of playing inside and some of the communication and exchanges. Those are the things that are getting the biggest trouble. But like physically, like one-on-one against just about anyone on the roster, he's really held his own, anchors extremely well. And so, you know, they're going to fill their practice squad up with these guys. And I could honestly see a handful of them contributing at some point this year as, you know, injuries mount somewhere else.
Justin, it sounds like Dan really likes Melvin Priestley.
I it was one of those things where I didn't, there's like 10 guys where like you just don't know a whole lot because you just get overwhelmed learning about everybody. And Melvin Priestley and Eric O'Neill were two of those guys that I just didn't know a whole lot, even like a week into camp. And at some point, like, they force you through their play to recognize them. And I was watching Melvin Priestley one-on-one reps, and he just was winning after win after win after win after win. I was like, all right, I got to figure out what this guy's about. And then Eric O'Neill, I did all my research on him, planned to write about him before the scrimmage, goes out and pick sixes, you know, tips a pass, great football IQ play. He obviously had the hit on Burrow in the preseason game. So
now it's everyone's, you know, story.
Yeah. Like, look, if you force people to take notice, that's a really great sign in this league. And so I think both those guys at worst are destined for practice squad spots.
And Eric Hunter is the next Nick Imanwari, right? Isn't that what people are saying?
God, they can't help themselves. Hey, let them go.
Let them dream. Let them dream.
Yeah. Let them go. Yeah.
Let us dream.
Yeah, that's right.
Preseason's this weekend, and Dog and Pony Show Brewing, which, by the way, mention Lions Collective, get some money off some beer. All right, get a dollar off. So go to Dog and Pony Show Brewing, which we'll be there for football season, stop it and say hi to our guy Kyle. And we're going to give our picks, our players to watch. You guys know where I'm going. Keith Abney II.
Yeah.
Going to have my eye on him. You mentioned, too, like him against Amon-Ra on that – him versus Quick Slants at 2025 at Arizona State. Check those numbers. 12 targets, 3 catches for 30 yards and a pick. So he's – I dare the Commanders. You run a Quick Slant. Throw that ball like Keith Abney. He'll have something to say about it. So I'm going to be watching Keith Abney. Obviously, the nickel battle, just in general, I have my eyes on. So I'm excited for that. But what are some players, some battles that you guys are excited to see game two? And will some starters get some run? Is this the game or no?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're going to play a lot of their starters. And I'm sure everyone feels some type of way about that. So go for it. By the way, Jeff, I think one of the single most iconic interception of Keith Abney's college career was a game-winning interception on a quick slant against, I believe, West Virginia, where he just beat the guy to the spot and basically caught the pass for the receiver. And that's a lot of what you do playing nickel, especially in this league. So those numbers that you referenced, which I did not know and are really impressive, bode well for what he could do as a nickel. I will be watching on Saturday someone else I wanted to mention in the rookie segment. So this actually works pretty well. Skylar Gill-Howard, over the past week and a half, 2 weeks of camp, has really come to life. And obviously he's a bit of a tweener on the defensive line, and he's probably built more to win those one-on-one rushes than he is to hold up against doubles in the run game. Not probably, definitely. But we've seen him begun to handle himself a little bit better in those run situations. And the pass rush juice is real, and it speaks for itself. We saw it in real time last week against the Bengals. There was that fourth and eight play, maybe sometime late second or late first half, where he was one-on-one with a guard. I went back and looked. It was Jalen Rivers, who was the second-year player who actually started a number of games last year for the Bengals. And Gil Howard had him one-on-one and just cooked him with a swim move. I don't even think Rivers laid a hand on him and ultimately forced the quarterback, Johnson, into a intentional grounding. And we've seen him come to life in that regard over the past week and a half, like I said. And he had the other play in the scrimmage where he chased Johnson down to the sideline. And on that play, he initially had to fight off a double team between the center and the guard, spin out of it. He got held. It wasn't called. It should have been. And he beat Johnson to the sticks on a third down play where Johnson looked destined for the first down. And here's Gil Howard outrunning the quarterback to the sideline and preventing the first down. I think he was a running back in high school, he told us, and he had that pick six last year where he was just flying. He picked the pass off like in the flat somehow from midfield and was just burners to the end zone. So I do think he fits sort of the new mold of defensive lineman the Lions are seeking, in that he's maybe a little bit lighter, but also a little bit quicker, has a faster first step than some of the guys they had last year. And I think he's a quietly important piece because that room at defensive tackle is pretty thin once you get past Tyleek and Aleem. And if one of those guys goes down, even if they don't, you're going to need reinforcements over the course of the season. And I think Gil Howard is someone that could provide it. It's funny, when I asked Aleem recently, you know, hey, when you were on the sideline last Thursday, just watching these guys play as a veteran, a student of the game, which of your defensive lineman peers most caught your eye? He was like, Skylar, right away. Yeah, it was the first guy that he mentioned. And to no surprise, go back and watch the tape. It makes sense that Aleem would be impressed. And they play a similar position. They have similar play styles. Aleem, obviously, a more complete player. But I don't know, maybe you guys can weigh in a bit on him. I think he has really put himself on the map after a pretty slow start to camp.
Yeah, his confidence is even rising off the field. Like, we get to see a little bit more of his personality. When Derek Moore was talking, he was chirping in the background. You can probably hear, if you watch the YouTube video of the Lions, but you probably hear Skylar going, yeah, Demo, yeah. Talk yourself up, Demo. Yeah, man, I was really impressed with what I saw from him in the preseason opener, and I would like to see more. And talking about a guy that's getting chances, we've seen him in certain packages with the first-team defense. And yeah. He is a quietly important piece. The Lions were looking for more of an interior rush this offseason. They went out and targeted him. They talked about him in the inside the draft video a couple rounds before he even, you know, ended up getting drafted. So I think they're factoring him into the plans, you know, pretty deep here. So love to see him. I'll go with, for this question, I'll go with the guy. You know, Dan Campbell keeps talking about that wide receiver room, and I don't know exactly what they're looking for. There's so many different body types and, you know, guys that are better on special teams than others. Tate Martin, I want to see more of him because Dan, I feel like, quietly like loves this guy, and they're trying to find maybe a spot for him as a guy that can really contribute on special teams. Dave Phipp talked him up. He's one of the first players he mentioned as a guy standing out to him. So Tate Martin, Derek Moore, obviously, guys like Ennis, Nick Whiteside. Those are guys I'm keeping my eye on again, but Tate Martin, man, I just feel like I haven't watched him enough, but I'm curious to see what he can do with another opportunity here.
It's nothing quiet about it, Colton. Dan's talked him up twice.
Yeah.
Phipps talked him up today. Like, Tate Martin's on their plus side right now. You mentioned Derek Moore. We talked about it. I'm very excited to see his debut. But I love the way Ennis has responded after kind of a disappointing preseason opener, and really disappointing because he had to exit with injury. And that's obviously a huge narrative around him. He came out and just played pissed off this week. And I think we saw that kind of in the way he tossed Tesla aside in that one-on-one rep. I thought his last two practices, including the full team scrimmages, were his two best practices in a Lions uniform. I think he has a swagger, a chip, something to prove right now, and I think that's going to carry over to the field on Saturday, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Well, that'll do it for today. Lions Collective, every single Wednesday. We'll see you guys next week. Hit the like button, subscribe, and continue to support. Until next time, we'll catch you all.